finding and testing what works for you is what's really important. So that's what I would say. Just, you know, just start one day at a time with it. And I think, you know, some people do a ton of research and out of the gate, they're ultra light. Like I met a guy at one of the Alder Rocks. I did a pack shakedown in 2020 with a guy. He was like, just started backpacking, but he'd read like, you know, all of the blogs and the, you know, all the things and learned about ultralight hiking basically before he even got started. So he had all the gear and he was ready to go. That's not how I did it. I don't think that's how most people do it because, you know, like you got to find out what works for you. Like I have a friend who's an ultralight hiker and he carries an iPad, you know, so it's like these things that might surprise you that are important for you to carry and then other things you don't want. Like I still carry a pod and like I like hot food, like it really motivates me and soothes me and gets me excited to get up in the morning to have my hot coffee. And, you know, other people go stoveless and that works for them. But for me, I need that kind of like nurturing. That said, when it's super hot out, I don't want anything hot. So, you know, I think that's something else to know too, is that you can have a gear setup for one situation, and then you can just keep adapting it. Like as the weather changes or you go to a different type of terrain or landscape. So yeah, just start where you are and then, you know, evaluate after every trip. Like, what did I use? What did I not use? Can I get a smaller version of this? Can I get a lighter version of it?
Hello, and welcome back to the Outdoor Minimalist Podcast. I'm your host, Meg Carney, and I'm an outdoor and environmental writer and author of the book, Outdoor Minimalist, Wasteless Hiking, Camping, and Backpacking. The Outdoor Minimalist Podcast has the goal to give listeners actionable ways to wasteless hiking, camping, backpacking, and more during every step of their process. Your impact outdoors starts long before you hit the trail and goes beyond leave no trace ethics. You'll learn how to identify sustainable outdoor brands, how to ask hard questions regarding sustainability, and begin to shift and evolve your mindset to integrate minimalism into all of your outdoor pursuits. In episode 122 of the Outdoor Minimalist Podcast, we are going ultralight. We haven't explored ultralight backpacking on this show for a number of reasons before, and one of those reasons is that it's not something that I really practice, so I don't know that much about it. It's still a topic that many listeners are interested in learning more about, so I was excited to invite an experienced ultralight hiker and entrepreneur onto the show to share about her journey to becoming an ultralight long-distance hiker. Sarah Berkeley started Symbiosis Gear in 2022 to meet the gear needs of women backpackers, especially in the ultralight space. When hiking the 2,650-mile Pacific Crest Trail in 2019, she bought and used three different backpacks, and none of them really fit that well. She doesn't want other women backpackers to have to experience the discomfort, extra expense, or discrimination that she did. So, she started Symbiosis Gear to cater to the needs of women backpackers. She knows that providing high-quality gear that fits well makes backpacking more accessible and enjoyable for women, thus building more diversity in the backpacking world. Thanks for joining me on the Outdoor Minimalist Podcast today, Sarah. I am excited to learn more about ultralight backpacking. It's not something that I regularly do, so it'll be really interesting to hear more about it. And then to start the episode, I'll ask you the question that all of my guests get, which is, how did you first get into outdoor recreation? And more specifically, I guess, for this episode, how did you get into backpacking?
Sure. Yeah. Well, thanks so much for having me. Excited to be here. Yeah, so my parents loved beautiful nature. So I was born near the ocean in Massachusetts. And then when I was 6, we moved to a small farm in Michigan. And then when I was 12, we moved to Colorado. So the, like, you know, what people think of as outdoor recreation in terms of hiking in the mountains started in Colorado when I was 12. But yeah, before that, I was, you know, appreciating nature and, you know, swimming in the ocean and, you know, playing in the fields and the trees in Michigan. We did start camping when I was a kid in Michigan with like my grandpa's old gear, like a canvas tent with a big pole in the middle, like a pyramid shaped thing. And, you know, sleeping bags that like took up your whole backpack essentially. So yeah, so those are my first camping trips up at like Sleeping Bear Dunes and in the Upper Peninsula of Michigan. Ultralight backpacking came later. On my second through hike, which was the Pacific Crest Trail in 2019, I started going gradually lighter. And so I definitely did not start out ultralight. And, you know, it was kind of times on the trail when I was ultralight and times when I wasn't. So like in the hot summertime in Northern California in August, you don't really need to carry a lot of gear to stay warm, obviously. So that was easier to be ultralight at that point. So yeah, I kind of started going ultralight by carrying less gear rather than buying the really expensive stuff or something like that. It was just kind of gradually learning what I didn't need to carry to help me go ultralight. And interestingly enough, the first person I met who was an ultralight backpacker was actually a retired lady on the Vermont Long Trail. And I really love that because usually people think, oh, ultralight dudes are like, you know, these skinny white dudes with beards who are like, you know, in their late 20s and early 30s, and they're all like very self-righteous and competitive and just sleep on the ground, you know, and all this stuff, which sure, there are some of those guys. But, you know, part of the mission of my business and Symbiosis Gear and my vision is that it's accessible to everybody who's interested in hiking that way. And, you know, meeting this retired woman was really eye-opening and made me realize that like ultralight hiking is actually makes the trail more accessible to more people and helps especially older people hike longer and like longer distances per day and also like be able to keep hiking later in life. So it has a lot of benefits besides the cool factor that it's usually associated with.
Yeah, I definitely think of like the image that you described. I think that's like in media, I think it's portrayed a lot like that. So I like that perspective. And I have tried to do a little more ultralight stuff here and there, depending on the trip, you know, and it definitely has so many benefits. So I think it's great that you want it to be more of an accessibility piece instead of like a cool factor. So you started backpacking pretty young, which is amazing. And so when you were learning about backpacking and like getting into it, were there any specific challenges that you faced or like learning curves?
Yeah. So my first trips when I was young were all car camping. So, you know, pull your car into the campsite and set up your tent right there. So the first backpacking trip, I think it was probably 12 or 13, and had really old gear that came from my grandpa. So one of them was this like canvas backpack that my grandpa had given to my mom and my mom had given to me. And I still have this thing. It's like it's so uncomfortable, but it's like such a classic. It's this really cool looking bag. And then the other backpack we had, I can't remember who was carrying what in my family, but the other one was an external frame nylon pack, probably from the 70s, I'm guessing. And it was just incredibly uncomfortable. We only went out for like 2 days, I think. And I don't know how many miles we hiked, but you know, our gear was too heavy. The backpacks were really uncomfortable. I was also growing really fast at the time, so did not have a lot of extra energy to do things like hike. Yeah, so I really wasn't that big of a fan. It didn't bother me using less stuff or the lack of creature comforts. That never was an issue for me. Like my friend, we had this family who came out from Michigan to hike with us, and my friend who was my age, she, I think, didn't pee for 2 days because she was so freaked out about being in the woods. And I think there were even outhouses out there, but no toilet paper. And yeah, so that kind of thing has never bothered me at all. But yeah, the discomfort of the gear has been a continual thing in all of my backpacking trips starting at age 12 or 13.
Yeah, what were some of those, like, the things that you've learned about gear throughout all those years, especially like specifically for women? Were there specific types of gear that were particularly uncomfortable other than the canvas bag that you had? Or did you have to make a lot of changes throughout like your younger adulthood as you got more into longer distance backpacking?
Yeah. So what I have found is that most backpacks are designed for men, and that is the case with those original ones that I was hiking with. And then now we have, you know, there are some women-specific backpacks on the market. Most of them, though, they do start with a men's bag and then just make a couple changes, you know, the shrink it and pink it kind of philosophy. So that's what's different about my company is that we start with a woman's body. And, you know, if it works for some guys, great, but that's not our target market. They have plenty of options already. So, yeah, I really like between those teenage years and my late 30s, I did not do a lot of backpacking. So when I went to do the Vermont Long Trail, I had a backpack that I had bought for like a quote unquote backpacking around Asia kind of thing, you know, staying in hostels, that kind of stuff. And even when I bought it, I went into the big outdoor retailer and this guy was like, yep, this is the pack you need. And I was like, this thing feels really heavy, like even empty. And this was like 2009 or 10. And I think this bag weighs like 6 pounds or something. And I was like, just didn't seem quite right to me. But, you know, I just trusted the male expert. I was like, I don't know what I'm doing. He knows everything. Those were the thoughts in my mind. So I took the bag and it was never that comfortable. But then when I decided to hike the Vermont Long Trail in 2018, I didn't want to invest a lot of money in new gear because I didn't know if I was going to like backpacking. And I was like, well, I got this backpack. I'll just try it. And yeah, so I did all the newbie mistakes on that trail and had way too much gear. And, you know, I sent myself a giant resupply box that like filled my entire backpack. Like it didn't register to me that like I was going to have to pick this up and then put all the stuff in my backpack. But it was a huge, literally a huge box. So I went to the post office with an empty backpack, picked it up, filled it, and then I had to put most of that stuff in the hiker box because you just can't carry that much stuff. And I had my old sleeping bag from the 90s that literally took up half the backpack. I think it also weighed like 5 pounds and really wasn't that warm. So yeah, definitely it's been a learning curve as I've gone along through my hikes.
Yeah, after that Vermont trail or even on the long trail, how did that experience influence like your gear choices going into your next long distance hike? Because did you hike the PCT after the long trail then?
Yeah. So I hiked the long trail in 2018. I hiked the PCT in 2019. And then I hiked the Colorado Trail in 2021. So yeah, for anybody who doesn't know, the Vermont Long Trail, it runs from the border of Massachusetts up through the state of Vermont to the border with Canada. I can't remember the mileage. I think it's 289 or something like that. And yeah, it basically goes along the spine of Vermont. So I started making gear changes almost right away. Like the first town stop, I sent some stuff back because I realized I didn't need it. And everything was so heavy and uncomfortable. I was brainstorming, like, what could I get rid of? And that is a lot of how I use my brain when I'm hiking, you know, like you have these thoughts on repeat of like, how many more miles to the camp or how many more miles to the next water? And the other thought that goes on in my head, it's like, what can I do to make my gear setup lighter? That started on the long trail just because it was so uncomfortable. And yeah, I had my dog on that trip as well, which was really lovely. And she had her own pack and, you know, learned about how much she could carry and all that stuff too. So yeah, I think I lost track of your question there. the gear changes I made along the way, was that?
Yeah. So like, as you became more involved in long distance hiking, how that influenced your gear changes? That's the main question.
Yeah. So when I was preparing to hike the Pacific Crest Trail, so again, for anybody who doesn't know, this is the one that Cheryl Strayed wrote about in Wild. However, she didn't finish the trail. I don't know if you know that, but she only hiked like 1,000 miles. So it's 2,650 miles from Mexico to Canada, basically along the spine of California, Oregon, and Washington. So you go through desert, you go through mountains, you go through volcanic areas. It's really amazing. So in starting to hike that trail, I knew I wanted to go lighter because I wanted the hike to be easier on my body. And I was 41 when I hiked that trail. So I also felt like I needed to take care of my body in ways that I didn't when I was in my 20s, you know, just like more maintenance, just trying to make the hike as easy as possible on my body because I knew it was going to be really hard. So yeah, I started listening to podcasts, looking at YouTube, trying to see what other women hikers were using for gear, and picked a bag I heard one other hiker used, and it was a light silk nylon pack. I went to a quilt instead of a sleeping bag on that trip. And that I still have that quilt to this day. That was a learning curve as well, because I went out with a corrugated Z-mat for my sleeping pad. And I didn't know that with a quilt, you kind of need an air mat to strap it around and seal in the air. Otherwise, it's pretty cold. So found that out the hard way. Then upgraded to an air mattress, which is a little bit heavier than the corrugated Z mat, but so much warmer. It's incredibly warm. And yeah, another big change I made between the Vermont Long Trail and the Pacific Crest Trail was shoes, to start hiking with running shoes rather than boots or heavier hiking shoes. And that's something like, you know, when I was reading about the Pacific Crest Trail before hiking it, I was like, how do these people hike 30 miles a day? And they just wear these like flimsy little running shoes, like what the heck? And yeah, personally, I don't like ultras. I did try them. I do need a little more support, and I like a more responsive kind of leaner shoe. My feet are pretty narrow, so the ultras kind of felt like clown shoes to me, and I wanted something more precise. But I did wear ultras for a while, and then I went back to my hiking shoes, and then my feet got bigger and I lost toenails and it was really painful. And then I went back to the ultras. And so, yeah, that was another way I cut some weight and learned there. I had times on the Pacific Crest Trail where I didn't carry a tent. I just did cowboy camping because it was so hot out. It really wasn't necessary. And that's definitely, for me, was a learning curve. Because when I started the Vermont Long Trail, I was just even scared to be in my tent alone in the woods, you know? And I was like, every little sound was like, oh my God, what is that? You know, and I was glad I had my dog with me. But, you know, I was like, oh, you should wear earplugs. And I was like, no, but you've got to be alert just in case something's happening. So to go from that to being like just throwing my sleeping bag down on the side of the trail and sleeping without a tent was definitely a learning curve. Let's see what else. Yeah, less clothes. I learned that, yeah, you don't really need a change of clothes. You're going to get stinky and disgusting no matter what. And I think the philosophy is really like the way I hike, I'm spending more time walking than I am spending in camp. So how do I make that time more enjoyable? And that's by carrying less gear. So yeah, I learned a lot from people I met on the trail. My friend Cruz, who he makes his own backpacks. He was the first person I met who did a make your own gear kind of thing. And when I found that, I was like, oh, tell me all about this. I have to know. And so I think, you know, that in a way planted the seed for Symbiosis gear of like, oh yeah, you can actually make your own gear that works for you. And actually going back to the retired woman I met on the Vermont Long Trail with ultralight pack, she actually had her pack altered to work for her because she had like a very narrow frame and she wanted like extra padding in the straps and stuff. So she hired a woman to like alter her pack for her. So those things kind of planted the seeds for me of like, yeah, if the gear isn't out there that works for you, then you can make your own or get it altered.
Yeah, I have had a lot of female friends that have started backpacking with me and they have run into a lot of problems with backpacks. I think I kind of lucked out because I have like really broad shoulders and the unisex bags. I don't even use women's bags. Like the unisex bags are the ones that work for me. And so I don't have the same issues that a lot of other women have. Adventuring plans on your calendar? Remember to grab your Lava Linens travel towel on your way out the door. Founded by a mother-daughter team, Lava Linens crafts durable, luxurious travel towels as a more sustainable and better performing alternative to microfiber and cotton towels. Powered by flax, hemp, and Tencel, they're designed to be by your side for years to come. Use the code OUTDOORMINIMALIST for 15% off your next order.
You said that meeting Cruz kind of like planted that seed, but were there other experiences that influenced like the creation or the start of Symbiosis gear for you?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. So I ended up going through three different backpacks on the Pacific Crest Trail. So that first one, the straps were like, they were too wide and they were set too far apart for me. So they were like over my rotator cuffs. And so I could like using trekking poles was uncomfortable and probably could have caused an injury. So actually I ditched my trekking poles partly as a way to go lighter, but also because it was so uncomfortable and hard to use. And you know, that can be a real safety issue and did become a safety issue for me. Like when I flipped up to Washington and, you know, I slipped, like there was this kind of traverse and I slipped and there I was like literally hanging by my fingernails on the side of this snow-covered mountain. And you know, if I had a trekking pole, that might not have happened. So having a backpack that fits, it can actually be a real safety concern. So that was the first one. The second one I got had women-specific straps and hip belt, but by that point, the volume of it was just too big because I had started to go a little lighter. So I found it like kind of hanging around my hips, and I call it kind of like the diaper effect, where it's just kind of like sagging there. So that one I found is a good pack for like if I'm carrying a bear canister or some other like heavier winter gear and stuff, having that framed pack that's larger is helpful. I went and got another one that had like a running vest front on it because I started to move quite quickly, especially, you know, in that those hot summer days when I didn't have much gear. So I started running on trail, especially like the downhill part into town when, you know, the backpack's empty, you don't have any food left, and it's like wake up in the morning, run into town and get some food. So I was like, oh, the running vest front will be great because then I won't have like a whole bag like sloshing around and it'll hold steady. And I kind of wondered, I was like, well, is it going to squish my boobs? I was like, oh, I have really small boobs. Maybe it'll probably be fine. It was so not fine. Oh my God. It was so horrible. And, you know, once with through hiking, like you're out there, it's not like you can just like go back to the store the next day and swap something out. So I hiked the entire length of Oregon with this incredibly uncomfortable backpack. And then that company actually, they did have S-curve straps that I could switch out. So once I got into a place with internet and stuff, I ordered those, but then I still have to wait for those to get shipped to the next thing. And meanwhile, I was seeing all these guys with all kinds of cool ultralight packs. And then I get up close and see like, oh, it had a fixed sternum strap. And I was like, well, I could order one of those, but is it going to work? I don't know. It's just a crapshoot because, you know, women's bodies are all so different. Like we need more adjustability because there's just a lot of variables. So yeah, I found that really frustrating. And then I emailed one company and said, you know, like, hey, can you make that pack just make it with an adjustable sternum strap? And they didn't even email me back. And I was really frustrated and like really kind of excluded and not seen. Yeah. So then after the PCT, I was really hoping someone else would start this company that was like women specific gear. And they didn't. So 2 years later, I was like, well, I guess it's me. Like, maybe I'm the person to do this. The idea just wouldn't let me go. So I have a background in art. I used to be an art professor. So I have a lot of experience making things. I was new to product design. I'm still learning about product design. But the idea of like iterative process where you have an idea, you do a mock-up, you do sketches, make something, you revise it, you do it again. Like all of that was not new to me. And I've also been a professional web designer. So that focus on user experience is really second nature to me to think about like, not just what does this look like, but how are people going to use it? What are the features they need? How does it fit them? You know, all of those kind of things, accessibility, like what about this person? What about that person? You know, trying to think through all the possible scenarios. Those were all in my wheelhouse already. And then, yeah, we started, Cruz actually gave me his pattern. So I started with that and I had a local person sew a prototype and then took that and cut it apart with my collaborator, Sam, who has been an incredible help as well. I met him on the PCT too. His trail name is Sai. And we went to the hardware store and we're just looking at things as like raw materials, like what is here that we could use for a mock-up of like the squishy stuff inside of your straps. And the first thing we bought was like a kitchen mat, you know, that people put on the front of the sink when, you know, and then we went over to another store and we found one of those roll-up foam camping mats that's what I had when I was a kid. They're very uncomfortable, but you know, they're whatever. So that we ended up using that foam mat and cutting it into S curves because our prototype, you know, it was a guy's pack, so it didn't have enough curve. So we cut it apart and remade the straps and sewed them back on. And then we had that to send to the factory that we're working with. And then there was a bunch of revision rounds where they would make their own version, send it back. And then I would try it and have other people try it and make some mock-ups and send them back and say, oh, can you move this over 2 millimeters, make the straps curvier. I think we went through 3 rounds of like, not curvy enough, not curvy enough. So, and then similarly with some of the inclusivity features of like extra long waist belts for bigger people, like, you know, it took them a couple times to really get that right. Similarly with the sternum strap is extra long just to accommodate more body shapes and sizes too.
Yeah, are those the main differences on your backpack, you would say, compared to what's already on the market, like the sternum strap, the general shape of the pack, and then the hip belt?
Yeah, so what I'll say, this is a different kind of pack. That there is no women's specific pack on the market that's an ultralight frameless pack. Usually I don't mention brands, but I'm going to mention a brand because everybody knows Osprey is probably the number one seller of women's specific packs. I did a survey before starting this company to find out what are women using, what do they like, what do they not like, and I think 60% came back and said they use an Osprey pack. I tried an Osprey pack before the Pacific Crest Trail, and I did not care for it, more from a style and fit, not fit, but like it has a lot of cushion and a lot of that kind of stuff that is just, like I said, with the shoes, I like a really lean, responsive shoe. I feel the same about my backpack. So I didn't really want all of that padding and all of the stretchy bounciness that pack offers. And I really couldn't find anything else women specific that was what I was looking for. So the pack that I've designed is that kind of leaner, minimal design that's frameless and ultralight, really no frills. And then in terms of the women's specific features, yeah, it has the S-curve straps. The sternum strap hooks in basically anywhere the entire length of the strap. So that is a feature I haven't seen on any backpacks other than ours, that, you know, that adjustability range is much more limited if it is adjustable at all on other backpacks. Yeah, so it doesn't have a hip belt. It has a waist belt because it is this ultralight frameless style. So it sits higher on the back than like something with a load-bearing hip belt. So the waist belt is webbing. You know, it doesn't have any padding in it because it's not meant to carry any weight really there. So yeah, the S-curve straps and the adjustability of the sternum strap up and down are really important. The adjustability of the sternum strap in terms of length is women specific feature. And then the straps themselves are set closer together, like a lot closer together than on most men's packs or unisex packs. And they're also narrower. Like some of the men's packs I've heard from smaller companies, like, oh, I made those straps even wider than usual and it's so great. And I'm like, well, that's great if you have wide shoulders and a flat chest. If you don't, the amount of space that is available to fit a strap, much more limited. So that was another important feature. If you do have a really wide, broad shoulders and a flat chest, you have more surface area to spread out the weight, which is great. But most women don't have that. So making it narrower makes it more comfortable.
Yeah, I mean, the gear in and of itself, I have really loved over the last, like, I would say even just like 5 years, seeing more like women owned, like women designed products for outdoor recreation, like even for trail running. You mentioned like the trail running vest on your backpack. I never used to use trail running vests because they weren't designed for women. And finally I found one that was designed for women. And I was like, wow, these are amazing, but they never would have worked for me before. And so I think it's really great that you have created this pack. So it's an option for women. But outside of, I guess, like the accessibility to the gear, how do you think we can make ultralight backpacking more accessible to everyone?
Mm. Yeah, that's a great question. Well, I think education is part of it. And, you know, visibility is really important too. And I'll be doing in the next few weeks more social media posts and so on, educational posts about that. And yeah, I think changing that stereotype or stigma of like, oh, it's just the cool factor, you know, because the men who pioneered it, somehow that became part of it. And, you know, it doesn't have to be all about that. Just like having more visibility in terms of who is actually doing it and who it's for is helpful. And then, you know, obviously having the gear, like if the gear isn't there, then it makes it harder to do, you know, like, I mean, my other collaborator, Lauren, her trail name is Dip. She was a very experienced hiker and she wanted a smaller backpack. And she ended up, you know, with Osprey because she's a smaller woman and that's really all that was available. And, you know, so she really didn't have the opportunity to go ultralight. She actually had bought a custom made ultralight backpack and then it didn't fit her right. So then she was just out all that money for that custom made backpack. And, you know, she went to resell it and the people who were interested were like men buying it for their teenage sons, which she was a little crestfallen because that's often where women end up looking for backpacks is in the youth area as well, especially smaller women.
Yeah, gear. I feel like there's so much to be said about gear. I can think back to like some of my friends that went to like large retail stores to like get a consult like you did. And then their recommendations were just like completely off. And it's such a bummer that like there's a lot of conflicting information, I guess, especially for women. It's nice that there's more creators like you out there that are offering advice and tips from like lived experience versus just like generalized, because everyone has so different needs, especially for women. Our body shapes vary dramatically and the trail is for everyone. So like having just one generalized, this works for 90% of the population, that's not going to be true for any product, at least for backpacking. So if someone is just starting out backpacking, or maybe they've been backpacking for a while and they want to transition to be ultralight, what advice would you give them? And then specifically for women, if there is specific advice.
Yeah, you make some interesting points there. And going back to your question of like how I got into this, I did also work at REI briefly because I wanted to learn more about the industry from the retail side of things. And yeah, I remember one time a very petite woman came in and she was like, I can never find backpacks that fit, you know? And I will say this backpack I've designed is one size fits most. It isn't, say, 5'2 and above it works for. I had somebody try it on yesterday who was pretty full figured and 5 foot, and it was a little bit too big for her. So we will have more sizes eventually, more types of gear and so on. This one is a one size fits most. So I just want people to know that, like, I see you, I hear you, and we'll get there. This isn't the backpack for everyone right now, but it is a step in the right direction. So for people who are interested in going ultralight, I would just take it one day at a time, and also like look beyond the big retailers, because there's often the companies themselves have like different sizes. Like, let's say of a sleeping mat might come in a short version, but the big retailer may not carry the short version. And that's something I learned on the PCT that I found really frustrating and was one of the issues with like the second backpack I had. They actually did have a short torso version. Sorry, I didn't carry that, so I couldn't go to the store to try it on. So I ordered straight from the retailer to have it delivered to, you know, a gas station on the side of the highway. And so you get the gear out there and it's like, well, either you take it and you wear it then, or you've got to go into town and send it back. So that, I mean, this is also a little bit of a push those big retailers to start carrying more inclusive sizing. They know this is something they need to improve on. So another little nudge right there. So yeah, if you know, I mean, I have a sleeping pad that's like 6'5". I'm 5'8". Like, that's a lot of extra weight I don't need to be carrying. So, you know, look directly to the company that's making the gear and see if they have other sizes that fit you better that may not be available at the big retailers. Yeah, doing your own research online is great. You know, obviously follow my YouTube channel and all of that stuff, but there are other people out there too you can learn. And you can learn from the dudes too. Like, to be honest, they've been doing it longer than women have. So there's a lot of wealth of knowledge there. And I have had moments of being kind of like angry, like, why isn't the outdoor industry more inclusive? Why are these companies not making this gear? And as you mentioned, like, the number of variables for women's bodies is huge. And once I started designing gear for women, I was like, oh, this is why they're not doing it. It's hard and it costs a lot of money, you know, whereas like men's bodies are basically, you know, like Jeeps. It's like kind of square or a rectangle. And there's like, you know, one variable is torso length and that's kind of it, you know, like, whereas women, it's like, how wide are your hips? How wide are your shoulders? How long is your torso? How big are your boobs? How big is your belly? Like, all of these things are factors and the combinations are different for everybody. So I'm proud of how inclusive this backpack is because there are so many different variables. But yeah, I think, you know, finding and testing what works for you is what's really important. So yeah, that's what I would say. Just, you know, just start one day at a time with it. And I think, You know, some people do a ton of research and out of the gate, they're ultralight. Like I met a guy at one of the Alder Rocks. I did a pack shakedown in 2020 with a guy. He was like, just started backpacking, but he'd read like, you know, all of the blogs and the, you know, all the things and learned about ultralight hiking basically before he even got started. So he had all the gear and he was ready to go. That's not how I did it. I don't think that's how most people do it because, you know, like, you got to find out what works for you. Like I have a friend who's an ultralight hiker and he carries an iPad, you know? So it's like these things that might surprise you that are important for you to carry. And then other things you don't want. Like I still carry a pod and like, I like hot food. Like it really motivates me and soothes me and gets me excited to get up in the morning to have my hot coffee. And, you know, other people go stoveless and that works for them. But for me, I need that kind of like nurturing. That said, when it's super hot out, I don't want anything hot. So, you know, I think that's something else to know too, is that you can have a gear set up for one situation and then you can just keep adapting it. Like as the weather changes or you go to a different type of terrain or landscape. So yeah, just start where you are and then, you know, evaluate after every trip. Like, what did I use? What did I not use? Can I get a smaller version of this? Can I get a lighter version of it? A couple other tips just in terms of like, not spending too much money on gear. I've gotten some gear on eBay. So used gear is a great way to go. REI now carries used gear too, but REI doesn't have like a lot of ultralight stuff. There's also the ultralight Reddit thread is a great one. Maybe we can put it in the show notes. I don't know it off the top of my head, but I think it's like UL gear trade on Reddit. And that's a great place to buy and sell gear. So it's nice to know like, if you do get something that you don't like, you can probably resell it on there and recoup some of your costs. Other ways to go ultralight. So first one, don't take stuff you don't need. Second is buy lighter gear. And third is cut your gear down. Like, you know, the classic cut your toothbrush handle off, you know, that kind of thing. But you can cut off other things like on our pack, for example, that waist belt is really long. If you don't need that, just like cut it down. Why not? You know? Yeah. So there's things like that where you can make your gear smaller yourself as well.
Yeah. Great tips. I love getting used gear. It can be difficult depending where you live and like if you don't know the sizing and stuff that you need. But I am definitely the type of person that is like trial and error. So like I'll just make adjustments kind of like as I go, kind of like you did, or like change things each trip to be like, well, this might work better, or I didn't like how this worked, or I don't need this, etc.
My name is Meg Carney, and I'm an outdoor and environmental journalist investigating the rise, pollution, and now regulation of a class of chemicals known as PFAS. Throughout this 10-part series, you'll hear from guests from all around the world who have a stake in the legislation, production, and use of PFAS chemicals. They'll answer questions like, what are PFAS?
PFAS is a very big group of fluororganic chemicals and polymers. They have a fully fluorinated or perfluorinated moieties in the structure, at least one, meaning that at least one carbon is all bonded to fluorine and not hydrogen.
Why is PFAS used so widely?
They are exceptionally high performance chemicals. They work very, very well at what they do. Primarily, they're designed as coatings or as films. They resist heat, they resist oil, they resist grease, they resist water, and they bond very tightly.
Why is PFAS dangerous?
Due to this bond, the fluorine-carbon bond, they have what we call extraordinary properties. Carbon-fluorine bond is the strongest we know in organic chemistry. And that's one of the main reasons that PFAS are persistent. And that means that there are no known degradation products in the environment. They don't mineralize.
And how can we move forward as an industry?
What's been great about the outdoor industry is we're talking about it. Everybody's talking about it. Everybody is being quite open, I think, in sharing. Everyone's got their maybe little, some brand technologies and things that are more confidential, but broadly, people are talking and product designers are talking and material management is talking about it. And I think that's the key. That's how we'll accelerate, you know, towards the finish line is by not holding back information, trying to be open and share as much as we can.
Tune in March 2024 to hear this 10-part podcast series. As the host and creator of this show and Black-Footed Ferret Productions, it is my goal and mission to provide free and accessible information for all. We are an independent podcast and rely on listener donations to produce content like this. To donate, follow the link in the show notes. And thank you for making this production a possibility.
Yeah, you make a good point that it really depends where you're going and what you're doing, like what you need to carry, like cold weather packing versus hot weather packing. It's just such a dramatic change. But there's so much information out there, and we'll be sure to share the links in the show notes to the ones that you mentioned. And I know you have some other resources available as well. So with that, how can listeners learn more about you, your ultralight backpacking process, and also Symbiosis gear?
Yeah, sure. Yeah. So our website is symbiosisgear.com, and you'll find everything about our backpack and company on there. I'll have a download for you, which is symbiosisgear/minimalist. And in there, you'll get it's like a gear calculator spreadsheet. So you can calculate your own gear. And then it's a recommended list of gear that I recommend. And I also worked on this with Sai, my collaborator, who is a professional gear reviewer. So I've got a lot of great recommendations in there, along with like highlighting some women-owned gear companies as well who are doing really cool stuff. So that'll be a free download for you. I can't remember what I have on YouTube at this moment, but I am going to be posting more YouTube videos specifically on how to go ultralight and like how to pack a frameless pack and things like that, that are things that I have learned along the way. I do a fair amount of Instagram. I just took like a couple months off after we did a Kickstarter, but I'm ramping that up again. So Instagram is also just at Symbiosis Gear. I do have a LinkedIn that doesn't have a lot on it, but you can find me there also, Symbiosis Gear. That's where to find it.
Awesome. Yep. And I'll be sure to share the links to all those things in the show notes below. But thanks so much, Sarah, for all your insights and the work that you've been doing with Symbiosis Gear. And yeah, I'm just glad that you had the time to come on the show and chat.
Yeah, thank you so much. Really appreciate it.
Thanks for listening. And if you like what you hear, let me know. Leave a review and be sure to subscribe so you never miss an episode. You can find us on Instagram at outdoor.minimalist.book, on YouTube, or subscribe to our weekly newsletter at theoutdoorminimalist.com. For even more updates, other educational resources, and to help build an outdoor community with the shared goal to create a better outdoor space as we recreate.